Hey, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? It's your favorite program, the Mean Green Nation Podcast, episode 31. And this time we have a proprietor of the free board. You can't even, it's not even really a proprietor. You're just like, you're like providing a public service, you know? You're like a Medici, you know, erecting a fountain or something like that, you know, so people can gather around and talk. Harry Myers, or Harris Myers, whatever you, how do you prefer to be referred to? Harry.
Either one's fine. Harry's pretty much what my friends call me. So whatever you're comfortable with.
All right. But yeah, so you you run GoMeanGreen.com. You've been on the show before.
Yes, I have.
Long-time listeners will remember you from your previous appearance. Of course, Mr. Greg Godecker, writer of the very popular Breakdown, is here also. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Adam?
I'm doing pretty good. Harry, I'm using your chat room.
Do it.
Yeah. I jumped in 97.03. Jumped in.
Cool.
Yes, we are talking. Yes, we are talking. All right, so big week. And that's a bye week. Greg mentioned this point was like a big deal. He was talking about how big the Louisiana Tech game would be when we previewed the season. And I think it's a good point to take stock. We've already played a conference game. We've already played, you know, a couple of games that tells us something, you know. Unlike previous seasons or something, you have like an early bye week. That doesn't really tell you anything. The big story, if you are any kind of Mean Green fan, has been and probably will be the quarterback position. And I guess, I don't know, was he an incumbent? New starter Josh Greer, he didn't do so well. And the fans, I think rightly so, rose as one and cried for Dejon Williams. And I think maybe Dan McCarney, I don't know if he reacted to the pressure. I mean, he kind of reacted to the terrible quarterback play. We were, like, the worst in the nation. But he went and started Dejon Williams, too. And he jumped out and had pretty much the best game that you could have, considering all the factors. Nichols is not very good. They are the worst FCS team probably ever. And I think I could probably go out there and throw a touchdown pass. So those are the those are the facts. What do we think about all those? I'm going to start with our guest, Harry. Where did you stand in the whole Dejon controversy, if there was one? And what did you think about his performance out there against Nichols?
Well, Adam, we get to go to some of the practices in the spring. And, I mean, I wrote some articles. And my read was that, head and shoulders, Dejon was the most talented guy we had at the position. So for whatever reason, he got put in the doghouse, and the decision was made that he wasn't one of the top two guys. He was, you know, probably number three or four. So I had sort of written him off. I'll be honest with you. I wasn't happy with Greer. I didn't think McNulty was the answer. I was starting to think, hey, man, maybe we need to pull the red shirt off of freshman Connor Means. Because I thought Connor Means probably had the best performance in the spring game of any of the quarterbacks. And I'll tell you something else. You know, Dejon getting injured in the spring and not being able to participate in that spring game pissed Dan McCarney off. So I think that really set him back in terms of the pecking order. So I'll be honest, during the Texas debacle game, which I was at, and I know you were too, I was really in the back of my mind thinking maybe we're going to have to burn this he's actually a true freshman, transferred in the spring, but Connor Means was going to possibly have to be the answer this season. So with Dejon having such a great game against Nichols, I mean, I think it's a good thing for the program. I'm very excited. I'm a huge Dejon fan. I think this guy is special. He's better than anything we've had at the position, and I've been following the program for a long time. So I'm real excited, and I don't really – you know, Nichols, yeah, they're bad, but there's some good football players on Nichols. It's not a high school team, and I really expect Dejon to do well at Indiana. I'm not saying we're going to win the game, But I think this guy brings some things that just changes the entire look of the offense and the way defenses have to play against us.
I think those are, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to disagree with those things. Greg, do you have any HSOs on it? Well, speaking of HSOs, if, like, you're so inclined, you can use this stupid Google Voice number that I have. You can text in the show, and it'd be almost like we are, you know, some ridiculous Saturday morning show that's going to give you, like, gambling tips or whatever. 210-701-0763. You can text in, and I'll be able to see it. And, I mean, you can even spam me if you want. And now you can also call in, and maybe I can drop it in the podcast. All right, Greg, what are your hot Dejon points?
No. Ever since I watched him in high school and getting to actually watch him play in live, you could tell he was the best quarterback we had. You could tell even just watching the spring game where we didn't get to see him that he might be the only option that we would have. And I was with Harry there too. I was hoping that, hey, if we're not going to use Dejon, then maybe we got to burn Connor's redshirt because we don't have anything at quarterback. You know, the spring game, I watched it and I was like, man, you know, Greer, his biggest downfall was making the quick decisions. Seemed like he was struggling with it. And then once we got into the season, it was the same thing. He was struggling to make those quick decisions. He was struggling with the confidence factor in the pocket. You know, once you hit that back, you know, back step in your drop, you got to have a pretty good idea of where you're going with the football. And he didn't. He didn't know where he was going. So, you know, I was excited once we got Dejon in there. And I think Coach McCartney really had no choice because the play on the field forced him to really put Dejon in there. He was really the only guy leading the team down for touchdowns. You know, whether it was handing the ball off or actually completing passes, looking like a competent quarterback out there. So I was excited to see him play against Nichols. Yeah, it was Nichols, and they're not a very good team. But at least we did what we were supposed to do against them. We didn't come out and struggle at all. We did exactly what we had to do. We went right down the field, scored a touchdown, 4 passes, 1 run. That's probably the most efficient this team has looked in the past couple of years. And I agree with Harry. This guy's the best quarterback we've had in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems like, you know, like, what I don't like is that a lot of things were kind of tossed on Dejon. He's like, well, like his character. And I think he just kind of ran into some bad luck and maybe made some poor decisions, the kind of decisions you make when you're 19. But, you know, on a scale to from, like, you know, criminal to, you know, just kind of young knucklehead kind of stuff, it's more towards the latter than it is, you know, the former. He didn't work out so hard. Who hasn't done that? I mean, as I sit here, getting flabbier by the second, you know? Getting better at the thing that you're doing that's maybe going to give you a job or something like that. I mean, I sit here and, you know, I stand guilty, you know, for not improving myself and my work stuff every day. Everybody kind of does something like that. So, it just kind of made me uncomfortable. Everybody's like, oh, well, this guy got to get his act together, you know? He is a kid. I try to remember that kind of stuff. On the subject of Nichols, I agree. They're not very good, but we destroyed them the way you should destroy a bad team. And I always remember, quick, like, side story. You know, I was, like, a big fan of Mike Leach and his air raid, and so I watched a lot of Texas Tech games. And, you know, he would always beat up on some FCS team, but you could tell that his teams were better because they're Big 12 squads, but they weren't great. And so that, you know, they'd beat him, like, 49-21 or, you know, like, 42-10. Stuff where it's like, well, they beat him, but they didn't just kind of, like, they didn't show the disparity in Big 12 talent. Until, like, 2008, when they had Mike Crabtree, and they actually looked like they could beat people. They were just, you know, those 49 points turned into 56, 59 points. And so, like, a subtle difference that you don't, you know, you see that they score, they don't kick a field goal when they, you know, when they could score a touchdown. And we didn't look so good against SMU. We could have put 70 on SMU, but our offense just wasn't there. And it was hidden by the fact that we scored 43 points because we so thoroughly dominated them. Sorry, I'm still not awake all the way. And then against Nichols, though, we did that. You know, the defense was there, and it's been good this whole season. They were, you know, intercepting passes, getting stops, and blocking kicks. The special teams was there. We were turning kicks. all that we needed was some sign that the offense was going to go down and score, you know, at the level that we need them to against a competition of FCS's status. And they did, and that made me super happy.
Yeah, I was glad we got the ball first in the Nichols game. I was hoping we would receive and just, okay, let's see what Dejon can do. Because that's, you know, that had to be like the most anticipated, most hyped debut of a UNT player since, you know, Tony Mitchell, really.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing is that I didn't even see it in time. I was trying to find that weird channel. It was on LiveWell TV, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Yeah, they were still showing the up here, I think Syracuse was playing somebody. So like you missed like the first three touchdowns up here.
Oh dang. That's the worst. All right, speaking of like fan experiences, I had another thing I wanted to talk about. And we can get back into Dejon, you can mix it back in. I've seen a lot of complaints on GoMeanGreen.com about like the Apogee fan, I don't want to say like just situation. A lot of people not showing up. Some of that is because of the weird times. We had a Thursday game. We had I think one game we played at 6 a.m. or sure didn't felt like it, in the middle of the sun, right, on the sun. So you guys have some HSOs on the fan thing?
Attended. You know, it's always a big debate every year, and I got to tell you, the guys that come on after the game's over, especially after a win, and post the, you know, they're out of town, they weren't there, and it's the subject title of the post is attendance with a question mark. It really beats me down. I mean, it really does, because you're all high, you're all excited about the team performing well and having a good time at the game and tailgating everything else. And it just sort of brings you back down to earth that, you know, there's this sort of big brother out there that's, no matter how successful or how great a day it was for the program, you know, how do you measure up to these programs that consistently have 40, 50,000 people in the stadium? And I mean, I know we have our issues. I look at it like this, you know, one winning season is not going to turn around the attendance issues at North Texas. It's just not going to happen. We have got to win consistently, and we've got to build momentum in the program. And let me give you an example of that. The Texas game, okay? I'm looking back at that Texas game right now and thinking, man, that might be one of the biggest lost opportunities this program has had in a long, long time. I'm talking decades, because they are not very good. And we just let that opportunity slip right through our fingers. You go from a great season, one of the best seasons of all time, to where you have the best crowd probably of all time in a bowl game at the Heart of Dallas Bowl. Momentum is an all-time high, and then you go into that Texas game and just lay a huge egg. And those are the things when you're trying to build attendance you cannot afford to do, because it takes the guys sitting on the fence, you know, basically out of the equation. So I just think it's going to be it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to have to be consistent winning before we can start seeing that alumni section fill up. And the good news to me is the student section. I think our students are, it just grows year after year after year, you know, and that's the positive if you're a North Texas fan to take out of the whole attendance equation.
What about you, Greg? What do you got?
Yeah, it's going to take the consistent winning, and we have got to beat, you know, somebody big. And, you know, Texas was our chance. And golly, boy, if you're Dan McCartney and you're sitting in your bed last night and you're thinking, I got this boy Dejon, and, man, if he would have just put it together, because he would have been the perfect guy for that situation. His calm demeanor, I mean, nothing would have mattered to him out there. He would have just played football. But anyway, that's a different thing. Yeah, we squandered the opportunity to gain extra fans at UT. And then, you know, it was kind of like, all right, the SMU game. Then it was a bad time. You know, it was hot out there. Nobody wanted to come. And I've pretty much given up on trying to get, you know, the old alumni to come in. I'm pretty much that once these students graduate, I'm hoping that they're the ones that are going to buy the tickets on the alumni side and come over and sit in the shade.
Yeah, that's the thing is like I mean, I'm one of the crazies that went to school while we were getting beat by everyone and everybody in new and even more creative ways. And yet, you know, like, and I'm sticking around, but there are a lot of people I know that they were kind of like, oh, well, they sucked while I was there, and they didn't really build up the tradition. I think they're doing a great job getting, you know, freshmen on campus, getting them to Apogee, and getting them excited about everything. And if we could retain even 60% of that fandom, because I'm sure there's cheapos that are just like, well, it was free when I was a student. Maybe if it was free now, I'd go, but it's not, and I don't want to go now. If we can just get 60% of the, you know, the graduating classes, I think that's all you kind of need to build, you know, a passionate fan base, and that's kind of what we're looking for. I totally agree on that Texas missed opportunity thing. I thought as much when I went up for the SMU game as Texas was getting pasted by BYU. I was just thinking, wow, if we had any offense in that game, we could have been right there hanging in, and who knows what could have happened.
Yeah, it would have been a fourth quarter game. You know, it would have come down to the end.
Yeah, I always remember that TCU went up to Oklahoma and beat Oklahoma, and kind of that run where TCU was getting better and getting better. And it was like that kind of win plus some other win where they go and you know, they play well against a big team that made TCU the big name in Dallas-Fort Worth. And speaking of, like, awesome, another more missed opportunities for, like, SMU, they lined up a bunch of Texas rivals, which I'm sure seemed great. And if they had any kind of team, you know, that could be any kind of entertaining, this would have been a nice, hey, look what we have going on here at SMU. But instead, they're like, look how terrible we are. And they went to, you know, they're playing every Texas team and just getting beat up by them. And I think that's all kinds of hilarious. Okay, so that's Dejon. That's the fan experience. That's looking back at the missed opportunity. Do you think Josh Greer will be, like, say Dejon gets injured, or say he's so great that, you know, he decides to transfer. Who knows what happens, right? Do you think Josh Greer can level up to a functioning college quarterback here? Maybe he's not Taylor Heineke, who was pretty awesome last night for ODU, but can he be a Derek Thompson? I'm just wondering. Any thoughts?
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, it's going to take some time. He's not going to do it this year. It won't happen. Maybe towards the end of next year. You saw some – once he got, like, roughed up in the pocket, you saw some things against Louisiana Tech where he started to get the ball out a little bit faster. And he made some okay plays, but, I mean, it's going to take some really good coaching by, you know, Coach Canales to really get this kid to settle down in the pocket, go through his reads. And that's the thing that I think that probably this offense does a little bit too much of is the reads. I think what they did with Dejon, they should probably do with Josh Greer. Simplify the offense. Simplify his reads. Because the less reads he has to go through, the quicker the decision he can make, the quicker the ball gets out. So, yes, maybe down the line he can be a serviceable backup, but he can't be the starter.
Well, I mean, and like you said, Harry, you kind of think that Connor Means is the future here. It's kind of a weird situation with Dejon being only, you know, a year technically ahead of Connor there. But what do you think about the backup quarterback situation going forward?
I think we need to check the paperwork for the quarterback we recruited that played at Navarro Junior College and just make sure it's the same guy that showed up, because I mean, you know, junior college isn't 1A, but a place like Navarro Junior College, there's some pretty high level talent there. I mean, for this guy to have the numbers that he had, and I understand he got injured and didn't play the whole season, but still led him to a bowl game, led him to a conference title game. Something just doesn't add up. And my take on it is maybe we tried to put too much of a playbook in this guy's head. You know, maybe we focused so much on trying to get him, you know, every inch of Canales's offensive mind, and somewhere along the way forgot about, hey, let's just let the guy go out and play football. Because he looked like his hard drive wasn't performing quickly enough. And I'm not ready to give up on him. I think it's a difficult situation because you got to rebuild this guy's confidence. And so I think letting him sit it out for a little bit and put it all together is probably not a bad deal. The other thing to keep in mind here, guys, and I got this directly from Canales, you know, don't underestimate, they're fearful about Dejan's ability to stay healthy. He did not do his offseason workout regimen. That's part of why he got benched. And I think they look at him and worry sometimes that, man, what's going to happen if he gets hit, you know, which the way he runs the ball and everything else, that's going to happen. It could happen against Indiana. So, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, and I certainly don't want to see Dejan get injured, but we don't really know what his durability situation is. And if he does get hit, boy, Josh Greer's right back in the mix of things, because you'd hate to have to burn that red shirt on Connor Means. But I think that's a big story that isn't getting talked about right now is, you know, yeah, Dejan did maybe handle all of his business the way he should, but a big issue I think for the coaching staff has been, you know, what do we want to put this guy out there and see him get broken in half? And I think that's something that's in the back of their minds. He sure looked durable against Nichols to me, but he didn't take a huge hit, but he took some contact. So that's another thing to keep an eye on in my mind.
Yeah, I think those are, and that's kind of why I brought it up, is that like he really is still, you know, one play away, meaning Josh Greer is, from taking the reins again. And I thought it was interesting that we put in Andy McNulty back there in the Nichols game and not Josh Greer. I don't know how much to read into that or what. But yeah, like the thing is that I don't know what reads Mike Canales is putting in for them. But I'm a fan, like I said, I've said this before, of making things simple. I think one of the reasons that like spread offenses became so popular and became so effective was because they were simple. It kind of got back to old school. I was watching some highlights of some like 1920s or 1930s football. They'd get up and they go and they play and they get tackled and they'd line right up and run another play. And I thought that was funny. And I wanted to say, hey, look, Nick Saban, see, they're just, that's a no hurry up, no huddle right there. It's in the 1920s, buddy. But yeah, a lot of it, you know, it's simple. It's getting back to playing, you know, like the football that was kind of envisioned when it was derived from rugby. That's the kind of stuff that you make it simple and you let the talent and you know shine basically. That's partly why Nick Saban, for all his genius, is kind of struggling with some of these hurry up no huddle squads in the SEC. It's because he wants them all to turn and he wants to get them in the perfect play. And you can't always be in the perfect play, and especially when you know when they have such complicated reads. I was looking at their playbook and they have like a call for each formation, and like everybody has, there's the linebacker calls a front, this guy calls that. They look around, they get into the perfect defense, and that's great when a guy's, you know, they run a play and then 35 seconds later they run another one. It's not so great when they line up and 5 seconds later they're running something else at you.
All right, I think it's kind of interesting with Dejan that they're worried about his ability to stay healthy, yet they're running the inverted veer play where the quarterback runs it right up the middle. Why are you going to run him? Why are we running our guy right up the middle when we could do a basic zone read play where he's running, you know, he's reading the backside defensive end and he's kind of staying away from where the defense is flowing to? That didn't make much sense to me. I'm glad it worked.
Yeah. The other thing is that, like, so, I mean, when the spread offense kind of got popular, I think most people's exposure to it came in 95 when Northwestern was running it up against Michigan. Like, the basic, it's kind of like, you know, you look at the NFL and they're getting, you know, flummoxed by some basic stuff that, like, Vince Young was running in 2003. But, you know, defenses have gotten better at defending the zone read, you know. So I think you kind of have to change who you're optioning off of. Like, a lot of times they'll option off the defensive tackle. And we've even done this. We ran it against Ball State last year. Remember that? I think you kind of have to do that kind of stuff just for variety's sake. But like I said on the board, I'd rather Dejan take a hint that he that he sees coming than one that he doesn't. Like Taylor Heinicke was getting beat up last night, and some of those looked dangerous because he was like about to throw, and then here's a defensive tackle just, you know, laying on top of him. I think that's kind of where you get injured, and I'm less concerned about him running a little sprint draw, you know, something out to the side there. What are you going to say, Greg?
Did you see Davis Webb take a hit? He knew that was coming. He barely got sneezed on and got his shoulder dislocated. Yeah. God, that was horrible. I mean, he barely got touched.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? They're playing a game where guys smash into each other. I think it's a good point, and I'm kind of scared about it. That's kind of why I wanted to talk a little bit about the backup quarterback situation. And
well, let me say this too, Adam. I think the other piece of it is they want – I mean, Derek Thompson was a coach's dream. And I think part of what they're doing is they're comparing Dejon's body to Derek Thompson's and saying, boy, wouldn't it be nice if Dejon could be 240, 230, 225 pounds at 6'4". And I got news for you. It ain't going to happen. He does not have that kind of body. And that's part of why I think he's got so many other, you know, facets to his game. His speed, you know, there were a couple plays against Nichols, and I'm not saying he's Johnny Manziel, but man, this guy can run. I mean, he's got some speed, some breakaway speed. And so I get real nervous when the coaches and the strength, you know, guys and everybody else start saying, well, we've got to get him up to 235. There's a, you know, weight that we, you know, that's perfect for him to be at the most optimal. You know, when you start talking about that, I think you start tweaking things. And I mean, you know, let the kid play. You know, I think the bottom line is he's never going to be a big muscled up guy. I just don't see that with his type of body, you know, his type of frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's never going to be Cam Newton type.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, that's the, I wish they all could be California girls kind of thing, right? Like, everybody wants the perfect specimen. Everybody wants LeBron James, you know, when they're recruiting a basketball guy. You can't always get that. You got to work with what you have. And so, yeah, I agree. I'll defer to the strength and conditioning coaches on what the best kind of physique a North Texas football player needs to have. But, you know, I'm hoping that they don't slow him down any by bulking him up. So,
I mean, look at the quarterbacks that Canales had when he ran, you know, the spread offense, zone read stuff for South Florida. He had Grothy and he had B.J. Daniels. They were both smaller in stature, but, you know, they were wide quarterbacks too. They were almost like running backs that he could beat up.
Yeah. All right, so let's look ahead to the Indiana game. Indiana went to Mizzou and they beat them. What do we think of that?
That's impressive. I mean, it's scary if you're a North Texas fan. I mean, you beat an SEC team on the road. I don't care who it is, even if it's Missouri, that's a huge win. And, you know, I just kind of wonder which Indiana team's going to show up because they've kind of had their ups and downs this season.
Yeah, and the funny thing about Missouri is that they're they are an SEC team when they win, but when they lose, SEC fans start calling them a fake SEC team. So, yeah, I mean, I thought that win was impressive. I don't know. I think it said more about Missouri than it did about Indiana. I haven't followed Indiana super closely ever. I mean, who does? I think anybody born in Indiana probably doesn't even know what's going on with their football team. Yeah, but, you know, like from what I've seen, you know, they could score some points. And they have some talent because it's a Big Ten. I don't know how true that is nowadays because, you know, I don't know. How do you think we match up with them? Greg, I'll let you start.
I think we'll be able to score points on them, but our defense, I think, is going to struggle with their offense. I think their ability to run and pass, I mean, we're going to do what we need to do to try and stop Tevin Coleman, who's an absolute beast at running back. He's averaging like 8 yards a carry. But, you know, then they can also throw the ball. So it's like we saw what happened against Louisiana Tech. And I know people are going to say the defense was demoralized. You know, they were tired. Whatever the fact was, they were still out of position at times against, you know, that offense. And this offense with Indiana is going to try and do some similar things. You know, they're going to run Coleman up the middle, and then they're going to run play action off of that. And we've seen our defense in the past struggle against those teams that have that run pass option. The teams that can be balanced against us are the teams that give our defense the most trouble.
Yeah, and I know we beat Indiana in 2011, but that might as well be 100 years ago. So I don't want to really talk about how they came here and we beat them up. Yeah, like last year they lost to the likes of, what, Navy. They lost to Missouri, Michigan State, Michigan, Minnesota. You know, I don't know how good they are. I don't know how to judge them. I do agree with your assessment there. I think our defense, they're not as disciplined as last year's squad was. I don't think we have the pass rush as we had last year. And although that's to be expected, and that's why it was more imperative that the offense could score some points at a better clip than last year's offense, just because we don't have Marcus Trice's crew to go clean it up and score points and do that kind of thing.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think our pass rush is good when they know it's going to be a pass. I think they can get after the quarterback. I think
I'm talking about just like on any down, you know, like, because I think last year they could get to the quarterback, whether it was a passing down, whether it was a rushing down. But
yeah, I think this year our secondary is struggling a little bit. I think Sheldon Wade and Laramie Lee's playing okay, but I think Sheldon Wade is kind of struggling a little bit in pass defense. And I think our linebackers are struggling a little bit in pass defense as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different factors there. You got any HSOs on the quality of the defense, Harry?
I mean, I think the signs are very encouraging for the defense. I mean, I think they're young. There's a bunch of young. I mean, you look at the playmakers and you look at the tackle leaders from game to game, and there's a bunch of young guys showing up on that list, which is very encouraging to me. So I think you might be right, Adam. We may not be where the defense was last year, but I think that the upside to this defense is much higher because of that defensive line, because of the fact we have so many young faces that are making plays. I think with Skladany's defense, you're looking at a bend don't break type philosophy. And what Greg said is absolutely right. A team that can pass the ball, and I think short range passes, you know, that's what La Tech was killing us with. You know, those outs to the, you know, to the sidelines where we had this huge cushion, and, you know, no, it wasn't a touchdown pass, but it was a 6-yard gain. You know, that along with a decent running back can spell trouble for this defense. And that's my fear, you know, heading into this Indiana game. And that's, again, Skladany's defense really requires an offense that can move the ball. And if we can get anything on the offensive side of things with Dejon, you know, in the passing game, the running game, whatever else, then that plays towards our defense's strengths. If we lay an egg on offense, then we're going to be in trouble. I think Indiana can run and throw the ball on just about anybody in the country. I think the question on this game is going to be, what do we do offensively to keep their offense off the field?
I think that's a fair point. One thing about, like, I bought his DVD, John Skladany's DVD. Let me tell you, it's a waste of $39. I mean, it's really just him. He's, like, looking at a board. It's like they stopped him on his way to, like, practice. They're like, hey, can you draw up some plays for us real quick? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure. Let me just do this for you. And then it's done. And that's it. There's, like, nothing. It's not very well produced, is what I'm saying. Save your money.
You know what? He's fun, though, if you meet him at Eastside. He's known to go to Eastside after games with his family. And that, you know, when you're with him one-on-one, and he'll answer questions, he's just the nicest guy in the world. I think that would be spend your money going to Eastside versus the DVD.
Yeah, get your $40, buy him a whiskey, and then talk about football that way. And instead of buying this DVD, because it's not that great, it's upset. But yeah, like, so he talks about in there, you know, why he wants it. It's like his base defense to have some cushion there, and that's it's mostly for run support and to get everything in front of you. And in theory, and really in practice, last year you can see evidence of how that worked. I think every defense has its problems. I mean, You already start out on the back foot. You don't know what play they're going to call. You don't know what they're going to run. And, you know, you have to react. It's read, react. this defense does a great job reacting to certain things, and it's not so great at other things. Like against a quarterback that can, that gets in rhythm and starts wheeling and dealing like Cody Sokol did, you saw what happened, is that he makes the passes that, you know, are really difficult to make, and there's not a whole lot you can do about that. And that's why you need the other half of the team to do some things.
And we were so concerned with stopping Kenneth Dixon that it affected our pass defense too, because he wasn't really beating us in the first quarter, and they weren't really running the ball well on us. And then in the second quarter, they started to run play action, and we were biting it. And I was sitting there like, hold on a second. Why are we doing this? They're not running the ball good against us, but they were so focused on when Dixon, you know, when we get that look, you know, we got to go get him. And, you know, that just kind of put us out of position.
Yeah. I wonder if that's a function of, like, the deep. Like, so last year's defense was kind of like a fourth-year defense. It had a lot of seniors, a lot of guys that were in Sclidini's system for a while. I noticed that was one of the problems they had, like the previous years, that they were pretty terrible when they were there on play action. They bit hard, and like Arkansas State tore us up that way. They would run right, throw it left, and the guy would be in wide open space, and you know, just slicing us up.
Our defense, they like to play very aggressive. You know, they like to attack things, and I think also in that game, the pass interference calls, the holding calls, I think that affected our guys in the secondary. I think they got a little gun shy, you know, things that they might normally get away with, they weren't getting away with. And then all of a sudden they're getting beat over the top. And, you know, it just, when things go bad, sometimes things go really bad in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, I think a lot of that, they would have felt more comfortable if, you know, our offense could have scored. And I think we beat that horse to death.
If they could have got a first down, maybe they would have felt
better. They could have got a first down. That was pretty awful. That was kind of, I don't know, it's like a very Conference USA thing, I think. Like, you get some hype, but like last week, Taylor Heinicke was like, oh, he beat the conference champs in Rice. Look at him wheeling and dealing out here, tossing for, you know, all these yards and all these touchdowns. And then they show up last night, and they go down by 24 to Middle Tennessee.
Oh man, Mutz beat him to death last night. Yeah. I mean, he looked like he'd never been hit that many times. The look on his face was pretty priceless. But you're absolutely right. I was expecting, and I saw, you know, he had some moments, but there's definitely a week by week hype that goes on in Conference USA, which is why this part of the season gets kind of fun, because you start to figure out what week five, week six, sort of where things are going to stand. And I think, you know, I'm looking forward to that, because there's still a lot of big question marks in the conference.
Yeah. Where do you guys think we stand in the conference right now? Where, if you had a power ranking, where would you put UNT at?
Wow, that's a tough question. Well, I mean, somewhere in the middle, probably. I don't know that we're that bad. I don't know that we're that good. I mean, I think this Indiana game will tell us a lot, but not really, because it's a non-conference game on the road. So if you lose it, it's not the end of the end of your season. I mean, the truth of the matter is, we keep talking about last year's team as the, you know, what we want to aspire to be. Last year's team was sitting in about the same place at this point, weren't they? I mean,
that's a great point.
Yeah.
Like, they underperformed against Idaho, even though they smacked them. The offense didn't really do as well as I thought they could have. And they dropped the ball against
Ohio.
Ohio, that was terrible. Yeah. So a lot of up and down in Conference USA. Let me tell you this: I don't think Marshall's that good. I think they are the most complete team in a league of incomplete teams, and I think that's going to carry them through. But they kind of had the same problem against East Carolina last year. They just got their shit handed to them, basically. You know, just because they're, you know, I don't know. I think in this league, there's a lot of parity, and I think that includes Marshall.
And let me address the West, Greg, the West in terms of your question. I think this game today, UTSA and FAU, will tell us a lot about where the West stands, because if UTSA dominates FAU, because it's at FAU, but if UTS goes up there and dominates them, then I think you got to you got to say in the West, at least Marshall in the East, but in the West, that UTSA is going to be the team to beat, because I think FAU, they're not great, but they're not bad. It'll be interesting. I'm kind of interested to see how that game turns out.
Yeah. Florida Atlantic got beat up by Nebraska 55-7. Alabama blanked them. They beat Tulsa, who's not very good, and they lost to Wyoming. So I don't know how good FAU is.
They barely lost to Wyoming. I mean, by a point or two. I think at home it'll be interesting, because I think they're not the worst team in Conference USA. So I'm not saying, UTSA might just beat them by a touchdown or something. But I mean, if UTSA goes in there and blows them out, then I think you got a pretty good – that's a pretty good sign that they're for real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll tell us how tough they are. Go ahead, sorry.
FAU's got a pretty good quarterback in Jaquizz Johnson. So, UTSA, they got their quarterback questions out there still. Tucker Carter got hurt against Oklahoma State. I think he's going to play today. I think they said he'll be okay, but still –
I think he's on a short leash, though.
Yeah, and if he is, then they're going to go back to their true freshman, and then, everything else about UTSA, they got their running game, they got a good offensive line, good defensive line, all that other stuff. Their quarterback, I mean, that could set them back. So it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, UTSA beat Houston at Houston to open their stadium. I didn't really know who to root for there. But, so I was glad in that one that Houston got beat in their own stadium, because Houston came to our stadium and our opener, and I remember the look on the guy's face. I looked at some guy in the face, and he was like, "Whose house? Cougs' house." And I wanted to trip all of them as they left the stadium. But whatever, So I'm glad they got beat there in their own home. I hate Houston. Yeah, and so then UTSA played. They got a – you know what? Here's a case of a moral victory. They played, Arizona on that Thursday night. And all the talk here – because I'm here in San Antonio. All the talk here was about how great they did, how it's a sign they arrived, this, that, and everything else. And I think some of that played into the following week against Oklahoma State, because then they got a real loss. They didn't get a moral victory there. And I wonder how all of that – kind of goes into this Florida Atlantic game. It's a big game because it's a conference game. I think Florida Atlantic could beat them. And if we have designs on winning this conference, we kind of need UTSA, because I think they're a more complete team than we are to trip up and get a conference loss.
Well, let me also throw in the whole Rice deal. I mean, what in the world happened to the Rice Owls? I mean, I was expecting ODU to show a lot more last night, given the fact they beat Rice, and was frankly not very impressed. So Rice is one of those teams that you figure in is going to be in the hunt every single year in the West. And now all of a sudden I'm scratching my head thinking, man, is this a rebuilding year for Rice? Because they just don't look very good. I don't think they've won a game. Have they?
No,
they have not won a game.
They played a pretty tough schedule. They lost to Notre Dame. They lost there. They lost at A&M. And then, the ODU debacle.
Yeah. I think if they had a little bit easier schedule, we'd look at them differently. They play – is it today? Today is the 27th?
Yeah.
Time flies. They play Southern Miss.
So they should win today. It's at least we can see, okay, are they that bad or are they kind of good? I think their defense, that's been the biggest issue. They've been all right on offense, but their defense has been bad. And that's kind of surprising. They got – Chris Covington, the All-American candidate defensive tackle. They got the one defensive back that came back from last year that was really good. I can't think of his name. I thought their defense would be okay, but not that bad.
Yeah. Other games across the Conference USA scoreboard. UTEP takes on Kansas State. We're not going to really learn anything about them. Western Kentucky takes on Navy. I hope Navy beats up Western Kentucky super bad. I don't like Western Kentucky. If we have a rival in anything, I want to say it's Western Kentucky just because they've beat us in basketball. And so I just don't like them in football. FIU takes on UAB. That should tell us some things. Rice and Southern Miss, like I said. And Louisiana Tech and Auburn. That one is not really interesting. More it's just an opportunity to talk about Louisiana Tech, because they had that Conference USA kind of thing too, where they beat up on us on a Thursday night game. They looked really good. Everybody was talking about how great they were, that how they played like on the road, you know, in like 5-6 days, and they got two big wins. And then they laid an egg versus Northwestern State.
If you don't come to play, yeah, if you don't come to play every Saturday, you can get beat by anybody, except for maybe SMU.
Yeah, and I mean, so I don't know, how good is Louisiana Tech? We're not going to learn anything as they take on Auburn today, but, you know.
Yeah, and that FIU-UAB game, you mentioned that, would tell us something. UAB is favored by 15 points in that game. That's a big line for a team that, yeah. I mean, they really haven't beaten anybody that was any good. So,
but that's interesting to North Texas fans, because I think a lot of us were looking at the schedule this year and saying, okay, we're going to beat UAB, we're going to beat UTEP, we're going to beat Southern Miss. And those are three automatic wins. And I think now, you know, I don't know that you can necessarily say that. I mean, I think UAB has improved, clearly improved from where they were last year. And then UTEP, you know, I read a couple of articles. I haven't watched any of their games, but I think they've gotten a lot better from what I can gather. They're running. They have a running back that's like tops in the nation or something. This might have been a week ago, but it sounds like they've got a running game, and they have that quarterback transfer, you know, the guy that was behind Johnny Manziel. Yeah. At A&M, that's
Jamil
playing
Showers.
Jamil Showers. So I think, you know, that's kind of the scary thing if you're a North Texas fan, is that some of these teams you were just marking in as a win before the season all of a sudden could be interesting games.
I mean, yeah, last year I marked a Tulane win, and we all know how that happened. They cheated. That's what happened. Yeah.
I mean, that game, I remember, you know, Joe Namath, his son. I'm like, how could you be Joe Namath?
You mean Joe Montana?
Joe Montana, I'm sorry. My bad.
How much were you drinking there, man?
Joe Montana, how can you call that your son? Like, I mean, I'd go up to my wife and slap her and be like, that's not my kid out there, because he was horrible.
Hey. Well, he kind of had that look on his face there, too. Like, he was, like, disinterested. His wife, you know, Mrs. Montana, she was like, wow, well, come on. Whatever his name, what is his name? Nick Montana.
Yeah, he's not the quarterback anymore.
He wasn't that good.
But yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I want to see UNT play somebody that's mediocre and actually play well, because I don't even know how good we are. I mean, we've beaten up on two really, really bad teams, and then we've, you know, poo-pooed the, you know, bed sheets against two average teams. So yeah. I got to see us play well against somebody that's, you know, going to win another football game this year before I say where we rank in the conference.
Well,
and that's really what's holding back the whole Dejon, superhero status. I mean, because you see it on the board. I mean, people are talking about what's his nickname going to be, and there's like pictures on Twitter of him, you know, and he's the savior and all this kind of stuff like that. And I think it's funny to look at it, because it's like that game being against the opponent, Nichols, just doesn't allow him to really be that superhero that our fan base so desperately wants at the quarterback position. I think you're absolutely right, Greg. If he can do not necessarily exactly the same thing he did against Nichols, but have that similar type of performance against just an average team, his stock is going to go through the roof. I mean, people are going to go absolutely insane about Dejon. You're going to see Dejon jerseys everywhere. I mean,
we won't see Dejon jerseys.
We're waiting for that.
We won't be ready to make them, because we are always behind.
Yeah. Well, homemade jerseys. People are going to go make their own Dejon jerseys, since they won't be available in the stores till next season.
Yeah. Like, after he graduates, then we'll put it in there. So that's what I was going to say, is that, like, right now we haven't been able to tell how good we are. Because, we were talking about, this is like the start of a new football season, basically, because we finally have a team that we think can go out there and compete, that we want to say, all right, I like this. Let's see what we can do with it. And Nichols was kind of like a preseason game. It was like a warm-up thing. We liked what we saw. Hey, if he goes out there and throws for 250 yards and two touchdowns and maybe even an interception, I'll be happy. As long as we're moving the ball down the field and playing some football. That's kind of what I feel like we haven't played any football up to this point, or we haven't been able to. I mean, yeah, SMU is terrible. Nichols is terrible. Texas was mediocre, but we played with one hand tied behind our back. And so that's disappointing there. Same thing with Louisiana Tech. That was at home, one hand tied behind our back. We didn't really get to go out there and see what we had. One other thing I was going to mention, I forget what it was.
I had something, Adam. I was going to ask Greg real quick. Greg, if you're the Indiana defensive coordinator and you are looking at film of North Texas and you see this new quarterback that's showing up on the scene, what is your strategy for North Texas? How do you play this game, to best ensure that you're going to get a home victory?
I'm going to force him to run to beat me. I think that's what a lot of defensive coordinators try and do now. They try and put the onus on the quarterback. They try and take away the running back because they want to beat up the quarterback. You know, they'll probably, read some press clippings and they'll know that, hey, this quarterback's not great in stature. He's not big in size. I'm going to force him to beat us running the football. Every read that I'm going to give him is going to be him. You have to take the ball and run. And if Dejon has to carry the ball 25 times, then I feel like we have a good chance of doing that. And then in his passing game, I mean, golly, you got to play man-to-man and you got to bump and run our wide receivers, because I'm not sure, that they're able to beat the press coverage, all the time. I know that our guys can get deep on a lot of teams in a hurry, like Darvin Kinsey and Carlos Harris, but I'm not sure, consistently, like Louisiana Tech, they were press covering our guys, and our guys struggled to get off the ball. And it was the same thing last year. So you press covered our wide receivers, forced Dejon to beat them running the ball, and, that's probably what I would do.
One thing I'll say about that is that I don't think that we're not the kind of team, and obviously we didn't recruit a guy that can take a beating like this. We're not saying, Dejon, you can run, and so we're going to make that a huge part of our offense, and you're going to run 25 times, 20 times, even 10 times. I think it's more like a constraint play that we believe we can run the ball, and when they stack the line, we need something to alleviate pressure there. And I think if you guys want, go read smartfootball.com, and he talks about constraint plays. And, like a bubble screen is not an offense. It is a constraint play. It is to, back you off of playing deep against the normal pass game. It's to get you back into your standard coverage that you believe you can beat. I think coaches, the way that you line up and you say, what is the one or two plays that we can run that we think we can get, 5-6 yards, those, what is that? What is the stat there, Greg, about success plays, success rate?
Yeah.
You want, what is the play that we can run that we know, if all things being equal, we can get 4 yards on in the run game, 5 yards on.
It's like on first down, you want to get 50% of the yards. On second down, you want to get 70% of the yards. Back to your question, Harry. If you want a good idea of how they're going to defend Dejon, watch the Maryland game today, because Maryland has a quarterback who's a very athletic, mobile guy, C.J. Brown. He's actually Maryland's leading rusher. And so let's see how they game plan to stop him, and that might give us a good idea on how they're going to try and stop us.
That's a great point, and I'm definitely looking forward. And it works out well because that FAU game is early, and then I think the Indiana game is at 2:30 or something like that. So I can't wait to watch that game. That's a great scouting opportunity. If you're a North Texas fan, I'm pretty sure it's televised, but anyway.
Yeah, it's on the Big Ten Network, and actually it starts at 12:30, 1:30.
Oh, is Eastern. It 12:30? Okay, 1:30 Eastern. Okay.
Yeah, but again, I take that with a grain of salt. I mean, if you look at him, he's your leading rusher. I don't think Dan McCartney wants
I agree, but it just –
how they deal with a guy that can run a little bit.
Yeah, their ideas, what are they going to try and make him do?
I can tell you right now, if I'm Indiana's defensive coordinator, I'm going to tell my entire team to focus on Dejon and make him, just like Greg said, make him beat us. He's got to be the one, and preferably running the ball, and hit him as hard as you can every single time. This guy's never taken a legitimate Division I hit in his entire career, And I mean, I know that sounds dirty, but I would not put it past them. I mean, that's football. You know, I'm not saying dirty hits. Yeah. I'm saying clean, you know, contact hits. Punish him every single time he's got the ball in his hands. And, I mean, I expect they'll do the same thing today, Greg, to this Maryland quarterback.
Should be interesting. I'm excited, yeah. though. It's like the rest of the season is up before us. We have a conference loss, but anything can happen in this league. And we still have a legitimate shot, you know, to beat to win the division and get a chance at the Conference USA Championship that we missed out on last year. And I think with that, we'll wrap it up. Thanks to we had a little handful of listeners here. None of them, you know, none of you guys responded. I gave you the text machine here. Somebody else jumped in. But yeah, maybe we'll do it again. I don't know. I have to figure out a schedule. I'm like super busy. It's stupid. I want to thank Harry for joining, for also being the Medici guy and providing the fountain by which we all converse about Mean Green football. Go meangreen.com. Anything else you want to pimp, Harry?
No, I appreciate you for having me on. This is always fun with you guys. And so just thanks for having me on, and get ready to watch some football today.
Yeah, exciting. Greg, you got anything going on that you want to promote?
Nope, I'm just going to be lazy today. I was lazy all week. I was thinking about doing some, you know, hardcore stats, but I was like, what does it matter? What are the, you know, first four games? They don't matter anymore.
It's no, they season. Don't. Yeah. Totally agree. You can find Harry on GoMeanGreen.com. He's Harry on the message board. Do you run the Go Mean Green Twitter account?
You know, that's mainly a automatic feed account. We sometimes go in and throw a couple tweets in from time to time, but my Twitter handle that I typically use is Mean Green Fan.
Okay, so Mean Green Fan, you can find him on the Twitters. Greg is MGN_breakdown. And he's getting more followers by the day. I was looking at him. I was like, God, look at him getting followers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am. I can be found all over the internet. But you can find me. The Mean Green Nation account is the one I primarily use to talk Mean Green football. That's Mean Green Nation. And you can tweet at me, and I'll respond to you, and it'll be fun times. Other than that, I think we're done. Thanks again. It was fun. I think I'm going to get some breakfast because now I'm getting hungry. This will be posted online, and you can listen there. It's on iTunes, so subscribe. Also subscribe and go listen to the Go Mean Green Barbershop podcast. That's Harry's podcast that he does with Evan. Is that
right? Yeah, we want to try to have you guys on that, too. If we can figure out our technology, how to do it, I'd love to have you guys on the show.
Yeah, man, anytime. Yeah, they are a little bit more sophisticated in that they speak to the higher-ups. They'll have Brett Vito on there. They have, you know, Rick Villarreal, and he'll, you know, he drops his nuggets of, I don't know. I don't know what he'd call it. Some of those things are just funny. He's a funny athletic director to have. Like you get him worked up, and then he's just like, oh, man, you know, we're just going to. Yeah, it's just funny. It's great. He's a lot more interesting than other athletic directors, I'll say that. Yeah, other than that, I think we're done. Goodbye, everybody. Go Mean Green.